Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The United States will take a collective breather tomorrow, stopping to give thanks and eat. But in Europe, there is no rest for the weary and the worried, as country after country falls into a massive pit of debt. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Toyota. Toyota is sharing technology and ideas for a better world. Learn more at toyota.com/ideas for good. And by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday, the 24th day of November, T-1 for Turkey. Here is the story that just won't go away. Today there was fresh evidence the trouble isn't over in Europe's debt crisis. Ireland is proposing the deepest budget cuts in its history. Students protested over education cuts in Italy and the UK. And a workers' strike shut down much of Portugal. Is this a sign of more worries ahead? Or does it reflect slow but steady progress in pulling those countries back from the brink? Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Today's strike by Portugal's two main labor unions closed schools and hospitals and caused travel chaos. Workers are already shouldering much of the burden from Portugal's debt crisis. Gracieta Cruz is a leader of the country's biggest trade union federation. She spoke to the BBC.
There are strong and quite hard measures, but certainly these measures were not the last one. We certainly are going to have another package of brutal measures against workers.
The unions fear an even stronger dose of tough medicine that could come attached to a bailout from the International Monetary Fund. Jacob Kierkegaard is an expert on Portugal at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He says the country's crisis probably doesn't pose much of a threat to the U.S. economy, given its limited trade and banking relationships. But once creditors finish with Portugal, they could set their sights on a bigger European target.
This is the same worry that we have every time we've seen one of these dominoes fall. Who's next? What we need to worry about is whether or not the markets, in my opinion, irrationally transmits contagion from Portugal onto Spain.
Kierkegaard says it may have the appearance of a haphazard jump from one crisis to the next, but he remains optimistic Europe's case-by-case response is doing some good. This may not be as fast as the U.S. was able to put together its stimulus plans, but the European Union is actually a club of different nations, so it's taking more time to work through its troubles.
These bailouts come with very tough conditionality, and you are actually very aggressively attacking the underlying economic inefficiencies in these economies.
He says as long as that process continues, painful though it may be, stability should return. Eventually. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
New claims for unemployment benefits continue to drop. The four-week moving average is at its lowest level since August of 2008. But the unemployment rate is stubbornly stuck just shy of 10%. The Federal Reserve addressed the jobs issue in the minutes from its November meeting. It said unemployment will remain high for at least a few more years. And what really stood out was that the Fed indicated that the jobless rate may stay between 5 and 6% over the long haul, a new and higher normal. We asked Marketplace's Elisa Roth to explore what that means.
Unemployment's been more than 9% for a year and a half. Sylvia Allegretto is an economist at the University of California, Berkeley. She says a healthy U.S. economy needs an unemployment rate of 5%. To get to that level, she figures the economy has to create 12 million jobs because we've already lost so many and there are still new people entering the workforce. The problem is we're only creating about 100,000 jobs a month.
At the rate that we're going, that certainly is going to be many, many years before we fill in that jobs gap and are able to get to a reasonable unemployment rate.
Still, there's a growing debate over whether a return to 5% unemployment is realistic. And the U.S. may have to get used to a normal unemployment rate of 6%. But it's hard to predict how long it could take to get even to that level. The high unemployment rate is already causing problems, like for state and local governments whose tax revenues have dropped and which are having to cut all kinds of services, including benefits for people who are unemployed. Gary Bertless is an economist at the Brookings Institution. He says it'll reach a point where that will push people back into the workforce.
because even a miserable job compared with the last one you held is still one that gives you a better standard of living than we provide through our system of social protection.
The numbers of long-term unemployed suggest people are still choosing unemployment over underemployment. But the Fed's outlook will certainly add pressure. It thinks unemployment is likely to stay above 9% next year and around 8% the year after. I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
They're called the fuel of tomorrow, rare earths. Critical metals in next-generation everything, wind turbines, electric vehicles, light bulbs. China controls the global supply, and a few months ago was widely believed to have cut exports of these substances to Japan, the world's key buyer. But today, Tokyo reports Beijing has restarted shipments. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports that competition from another supplier may be behind the change of heart.
The industrial world may be heaving a sigh of relief now that slow boats from China are shipping rare earth metals again. But Beijing says it won't be exporting much anymore because of its own demand. That may explain why Japanese factories signed up with Australian mining company Lynas. Japan hopes to get a quarter of its supply from down under. Thing is, the shipments won't start for a year. The mine isn't ready, and the process is hard, says analyst Byron King at Agora Financial.
This is very, very high-end, technically challenging. The West is really behind the eight ball on this. We don't have the people, we don't have the engineers, we don't have the scientists.
But Western firms do have ambition. Mark Smith is CEO of Colorado mining company Molycorp.
There is only one conclusion at the end of the day. The rest of the world had better find alternative sources of rare earths because China cannot supply the entire world as they have done for many years.
American companies once mined rare earths, but low prices and stiff environmental rules killed off the industry. Now, Molycorp wants to fill that void by reopening its own mine. And King says with rare earth prices sky high, other miners are coming out of the woodwork too. He recalls a trade show last month in Hong Kong.
Many of the up-and-coming developers staged what I call a swimsuit contest, where they would get up on the stage and put their slideshow and talk about, you know, how great their ore deposit is.
Analysts figure it could take 5-10 years before the West's rare earth ecosystem revives. Till then, hold on to that Chinese Rolodex. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
On Wall Street, a holiday bounce before traders headed out for Grandma's house. Details when we do the numbers. We talked at the top of the show about who's getting hurt in the European debt crisis. Well, here's one unexpected victim, if you will. Big-time basketball players. Many of them, the top talent particularly, used to head to Greece for high salaries and handsome tax breaks. But that country's financial woes are far from rebounding, and the days of slam-dunk living for the hoops heroes could be numbered. From Athens, Joanna Kakissis reports.
Mike Batiste watches as a teammate shoots baskets before practice. Batiste is from Long Beach, California, and he plays for Panathinaikos. It's the most successful basketball team in Greece and one of the best in Europe. Batiste played a season in 2002 with the Memphis Grizzlies. The following year, Panathinaikos came calling. They offered him $3 million and said they would pay for his income taxes. The NBA never did that.
They give you an apartment, a car. So in the end, it kind of makes sense to for a player my caliber to be here and play basketball.
But other top foreign players are leaving the country. Greece's other major basketball team is Olympiakos from the city of Piraeus. It lost two of its big foreign stars to the NBA this summer. Josh Childress joined the Phoenix Suns, and Linus Kleiza went to the Toronto Raptors. The teams don't have the cash to make big offers, says George Yurgakopoulos, a sports writer at the Greek newspaper Kathimerini.
They have decided not to go after major names in the market, as opposed to what they used to do until last summer.
Since then, Greece has fallen into a deep recession caused by a massive debt crisis. The government has raised taxes. The rate for athletes making more than $136,000 has shot up from 21% to 45%. Most teams can no longer cover those taxes, says Alex Politis, a player agent in Athens. He says average salaries for foreign players have dropped by as much as 70%.
And I suppose if it won't stay the same, it will go even lower next season. And I can't really predict what will happen after that.
The bigger clubs like Panathinaikos and Olympiakos are bankrolled by wealthy owners. Smaller clubs are in the most trouble, says Yorga Kopoulos, the sports writer.
It looks like it's not going to get any better in the next few months.
It's a Monday night home game for Ikaros, a small suburban Athens team. American up-and-comer Patrick Carroll started with the team this summer. The Pittsburgh native played with the NBA Development League but wasn't picked up by a U.S. team. Carroll is playing his first game tonight. Fans in buzz cuts and black jeans sing fight songs. Before he came to Greece, Carroll says he worried about what would happen to his new team.
Yeah, I mean, before I signed here, it does cross your mind. You know, I wanted to continue my basketball career, and Greece seemed like a place that I haven't been, and it seemed like a good opportunity to play in this league.
Ikaros gave Carroll an apartment and a car, though not the great big salary that a star like Mike Batiste gets. But Carroll's not complaining. So far, Ikaros is surviving Greece's economic storm. And tonight, at least, his team wins. In Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis for Marketplace.
When members of Congress return from Thanksgiving recess, they'll have plenty of leftovers to gnaw on in terms of legislation with looming deadlines, the estate tax, unemployment benefits, and, of course, the end-of-year expiration of Bush-era tax cuts. Much has been made of extending cuts for anyone under the $250,000 income threshold, but recently there's been some talk of raising that cap to $1 million. Commentator David Frum doesn't think that's the solution either.
America is not exactly in love with the super rich these days. Super rich no longer conjures up Steve Jobs bringing us the iPhone or Google putting all the world's knowledge at our fingertips. The phrase instead conjures up investment bankers who wrecked the American housing market and then dumped the bill on the U.S. Treasury. So you can understand why the idea of a new higher income tax rate for people earning more than $1 million a year has gained political traction. But it's still a terrible idea. Higher tax rates exact real economic costs. Maybe $2 in deadweight loss to the economy for every extra $1 collected. That's according to Martin Feldstein of Harvard and the National Bureau of Economic Research. One reason that higher rates do so much harm? Very rich people have a lot of economic options. If income tax rates rise too high, they will invest time, energy, and money to redesignate their income. If, for example, corporate tax rates are lower than personal, they'll hold income inside corporations. Or their accountants will invent ways to transform income into capital gains. Or to generate tax losses. This tax avoidance by the rich is cumbersome and inefficient for the rich themselves. So if the tax rates are set at reasonable rates, tax compliance becomes the better deal. This was the thinking behind the tax reforms of the 1980s. At a maximum rate of 27%, it simply was not worthwhile to pay the lawyers to invent tax shelters. There's a lesson here for today. The job of the tax system is to raise revenues for the state in ways that do minimum harm to the economy. The job is not to punish unpopular groups of people, especially when the punishment does much more harm to the overall society than to the intended targets.
David Frum is the editor of Frum Forum and is former speechwriter for President George W. Bush. Commentator Robert Reich is back next Wednesday. Meantime, send us your comments at marketplace.org. Coming up, a tale of two Virginias.
People in the 9th District of Southwest Virginia are 20 years behind the national average. The richer Northerners are where the country will be decades from now.
But first, let's do the numbers. Fewer unemployment claims and a rosier outlook from consumers put Wall Street in a thankful mood. The Dow added 150 points, about 1.3%, to finish at 11,187. The Nasdaq rose 48 points, almost 2%, to end at 2543. And the S&P 500 tacked on 17 points, about 1.5%, to close at 1198. Retailers were particularly grateful. Shares of Tiffany & Company gobbled up 5.25%. The luxury jeweler predicted better-than-expected holiday sales after posting better-than-expected earnings. Shares of discounter Target racked up 3.75%, and Sears Holding Corporation took in nearly 3%. Over to airlines, United Continental soared nearly 4.75%, while Delta cruised up 4.5%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.9%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt. It's more car than electric. By Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at AllyBank.com. And by the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia. What does Tier 1 Capital have in common with a wedding cake? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events for Thursday. It's Thanksgiving. According to the National Turkey Federation, about 46 million turkeys will end up on tables across the country. All U.S. financial institutions and government offices will be closed in observance of the holiday. And it's the 84th Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Started in 1924, it originally showcased real animals, not helium balloons, as the main attraction. I'm Millie Jefferson.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Time to dip into the old inbox to hear from you. This week we learned about the two-minute pitch, in which you apply for a job with a short voicemail message. We talked to some experts who thought it was a bad idea. Julia Pfaff of Alexandria, Virginia, welcomes it.
It would provide me, I think, the opportunity to stand out in front of a crowd. Rather than just submitting my resume to a giant database that uses some strange algorithm to call out whether or not I am a good candidate for a position.
But Mike Warnes of Lombard, Illinois, detected something more sinister, if unintentional, using those voicemails to detect the race of an applicant. He wrote, Barack Obama would make it past this bar, but would Tracy Morgan? Last week, Sports Illustrated's John Wertheim told us it was economically rational for high school athletes to ask universities and alumni for money in exchange for play. Quinn Ballard of Sacramento, California, was less than sympathetic.
I still think athletes get an incredible value from attending college. How many are prepared to leap straight into professional sports from high school? The vast majority of college players get invaluable experience playing against top-caliber peers until they are ready to join the pros.
He went on to suggest that maybe colleges should charge athletes for all that useful training they get. And speaking of charging, this week Netflix introduced an online streaming-only plan for its subscribers. Kevin Gummany of College Station, Texas, says our piece left out an important detail.
The story doesn't mention that Netflix is raising its rates on all of the plans. So if you don't stream movies, either because you have no interest or don't own one of the appliances that Netflix streams to, you're basically subsidizing those who do.
And finally, Herb Gaskill, a retail investor in Rodanthe, North Carolina, disagrees with UCLA law professor Stephen Bainbridge's contention that insider trading has minimal negative effect on investors. Gaskill calls that absurd and says retail investors like him would make huge profits if they knew about changes in stock ratings in advance. We're always interested in hearing your ratings of us. Go to marketplace.org and click on the link that says contact. Congratulations! You made a little more money last month. Government figures out today show incomes rose 0.5% in October, something to give thanks for on the eve of Turkey Day. Now, that figure is an aggregate one, of course, an entire country's income rolled up into one. It might not say much about how things are going where you live. So to gauge that, a new report on well-being looks at congressional districts across America, and it finds gaps wide and deep even within a single state. Correspondent David Brancaccio reports regularly on our show about how we can make the global economy work better for more people. We call the series Economy 4.0. Today, David has a story from rich and poor Virginia.
The 9th Congressional District in Virginia. Appalachia, as south and west as you can get in Virginia without crossing into Tennessee or Kentucky.
This is my hometown. This store that we're in front of right now used to be a grocery store. And then after it went out of business...
Debbie Jesse, a retired history teacher, gives a driving tour of the tiny town of Dryden.
They put a flea market in here, and even the flea market's dried up now.
Debbie's not even sure you can get a slice of pizza in town. In Dryden, there's hardly a business left, with coal mining hiring fewer and the tobacco industry in decline.
We've got a tag that used to go on our license that said Dryden, the hub of industry.
Doesn't exactly look like that now, I'm sorry to say.
Unfortunately, that's correct.
Switch now to the same state's 8th Congressional District, as north as you can go in Virginia without crossing into Washington, D.C.
Now, this place was a donut shop, then it was a Mexican restaurant, now it's a fancy restaurant.
Tom Brooke, a lawyer, grew up in this vastly different part of Virginia, a suburb called Vienna.
You can see over here on the left, even in this sort of Class C strip mall, everything's open. There isn't an empty storefront there that I can see. No, I don't see a single one.
This contrast is documented by a group called the American Human Development Project. It's been looking at income, longevity, and education in congressional districts across the U.S. as part of its new assessment of well-being called the Measure of America. The group calculates that in terms of well-being, people in the 9th District of Southwest Virginia are 20 years behind the national average. The richer, healthier, more educated northerners are where the country will be decades from now. Crossing Virginia is like taking a time machine from the past to the future. Sarah Bird Sharps is the report's co-author.
We're trying to get people to recognize that having groups fallen badly behind in this country is not good for those groups themselves, but it's also really bad for our competitiveness and for our future.
In Virginia, a child born today in the poor district is likely to die 8 years before a child born in the richer district. In the North, typical household income is more than double, $51,000 compared to $21,000 a year.
We've gotten into a cycle of fatalism, I guess. This is the way it's been. This is the way it's going to be. It's not going to change.
While home ownership and unemployment rates are equivalent, Southwest and North, what's not is education. Schools there struggle with funding and human resources.
We used to have a physics teacher at Lee High. She is now the assistant principal there, so we've not offered physics for about 3 years now.
So how many engineers are you going to get coming out of this county if you don't teach physics?
Well, it may be a little bit more challenge for them to go to college.
The school is now offering some students physics via the Internet. In Debbie's congressional district, just 17% have a bachelor's degree or higher. In the North, it's 59%, which also connects to the types of jobs people can have.
There's two lawyers in the next house. I think they're both lawyers. Lawyer across the street. Can swing a dead cat and find a lawyer in this neighborhood.
Tom, our tour guide in Northern Virginia, came from a family where money was tight and public education fully embraced. Tom went to a good local high school with amenities such as a vigorous Model United Nations program that helped him get into Virginia's elite college of William and Mary, first for a BA, then a law degree. Again, Sarah Bird Sharps, co-author of the Measure of America report.
We We found that adults with a master's or professional degree in the top earning district are 4.5 times higher than in the lower district. So that enables residents of that high district to get higher paid, higher skilled employment. And that is a huge contributing factor to the earnings disparity.
Diana Furchgott-Roth, a senior fellow with the Hudson Institute, takes a more free market approach. She says quality schools are a crucial way to help people get the opportunities they deserve.
We should be concerned about mobility through the system, but equality should not be one of our social goals at all. What we should do is make sure people have the opportunities to live the lives that they want.
Still, a politically diverse range of groups is expected to use the new well-being data as fodder for policy. For instance, Catholic Charities USA is using the new human development indicators to guide its campaign to reduce poverty in America by half within 10 years. In Dryden, Virginia, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
Find out where your congressional district ranks in income, education, and health. We've got a link to that and more at David's Economy 4.0 blog at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com. By Novo Nordisk, since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. And by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, when you pick up your fork to shovel stuffing tomorrow, put the BlackBerry down, would you? A new survey from Harris Interactive says 59% of you will check your work email at least once during the holiday break. Come on, you can do without them, they can do without you, at least till the mincemeat arrives, then you're excused. Oh, and this other final note. Here in L.A., it's not usually cold enough to have a fire going at Thanksgiving. This year, it's dropping all the way to the mid-60s. Brr. But if the fireplace isn't clean, you could always turn on the cable for the annual TV Yule log. And this year, make sure you have those glasses you kept after seeing Avatar. Comcast's Yule log is in 3D. Oh, and one more final note. If you're planning a face-off with Granddad over who carves the turkey, have a check ready for Facebook. It's on its way to trademarking the word face. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow plumped up 150 points, about 1.3%. The NASDAQ ballooned 48 points, almost 2%. And the S&P tacked on 17 more points, about 1.5%. Our engineers include Baham Baladuni, Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Eric Johnson, Jeff Peters, and Charlton Thorpe. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Next time on this broadcast, you'd think being labeled a rock star means you're living it up. Not so much.
When I was younger, we thought we hit it big, and it was great. We were making good money for your person in your 20s, but you know what? I have to work, just like every other schmuck.
Rockstar day jobs. I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.